Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, welcome back. Another special edition of the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show. World Cup qualifying. USA, Honduras, 6-0. That's right. 6-0. 6-0. The resurrection that came out of nowhere in this one as the United States demolishes Honduras by an unbelievable performance. Joining me right now, Carter Krishnire from World Soccer Talk, my colleague over at Red Bull Arena, Mr. Eduardo Solano from La Prensa, that represents a paper in Honduras, and now joining, I believe we got Chris Gluck on the line, of course, from Yellow Card Podcast. Carter Krishnire, we go to you first. What in the hell did we just see, and what in the hell was that performance, and why did it take this long to make that move?
Well, we talked about in the pregame show about the hesitation of Sunil Gulati to make the move to pull the trigger when it was obvious that the United States was in a decline. Quite honestly, I mean, before the World Cup in 2014, but most obviously during the 2015 Gold Cup and some of the friendlies that year, friendlies to end 2014, and then also in the CONCACAF Cup match against Mexico at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena in October of 2015. I think, though, the move, this was at the absolute latest you could make the move. We talked about how the FMF stuck with Chepo de la Torre too long in the 2013-2014 cycle, and we're very fortunate to qualify for the World Cup in spite of that. Chepo had built up more credit, in all honesty, with winning than Jurgen Klinsmann had, so maybe that's why he lasted longer. So I think psychologically the United States is in a completely different place with Bruce Arena as the manager than Jurgen Klinsmann, or quite frankly anyone as the manager. We have to think about whether we give Bruce Arena full credit for this if this revival continues down in Panama City, or if it's just the mere managerial change. Because I think there was a sense of malaise and maybe impending doom among the players and among kind of the U.S. soccer aristocracy, if you will, under Jurgen Klinsmann toward the end. And any coaching change might have worked, given that reality. But certainly the guys came out and performed at a very high level today. I want to emphasize to our listeners, this is not a vintage Honduras side. This is not the side Suarez had qualifying for 2014 or Rueda had qualifying for 2010. This is a younger Honduras team, few familiar names for fans of Major League Soccer, but not the kind of strong, dominating midfield that you would get back in the day with a Wilson Palacios and a Henry Thomas, and a level of player that was really at an elite level for CONCACAF when David Suazo was healthy. And I can go on and on with those great Honduran players. They're in a bit of a rebuilding period, but I thought with Pinto managing them, they would come in with a game plan to constrict the space in which the United States could play in, particularly Pulisic and Michael Bradley. And we didn't really see that happen. Pinto has a very good record against the United States when he managed Costa Rica. But this was his game plan, whatever it was undone very, very quickly, and decisive defeat for Honduras.
Well, then let's go to Eduardo Solano, of course, who writes for La Prensa from Honduras. From what you saw at the start of the match, even before the first goal happened, Eduardo, what did you see from Honduras that where, yeah, I think, you know, they tried to stop Michael Bradley from controlling the ball in his deep midfield role, but what troubled you and what did you see from Jorge Luis Pinto's side that made you think that maybe this is not the night for Honduras?
Well, this a couple of situations that really bother me, like coming into this game. You see the goalkeeper, Donis Escobar. He's a really good goalkeeper, but he was injured. He hasn't even played in the Honduran National League. There's another guy, Ever Alvarado. I wasn't expecting him to play. That was a surprise to me to see him on the starting lineup. Jorge Claros. I don't even know why he stays in the starting 11. I don't think he has the quality. There's a lot of issues with this national team from Honduras. And I wouldn't call it a rebuilding team because there's a lot of experience. There's a lot of players like Minor Figueroa, Roger Espinosa, Beckles, the same goalkeeper, Kyoto. There's a lot of players that have a lot of experience, but they didn't show up. I don't even know why. And that first goal, it makes me feel like, you know, I don't need to worry about this. They already scored. That's it. We're going to go back. We're going to go back into this game. We're going to score. We're going to do something. And then you have the second goal, the third goal. And once you see the third goal, like, there's no coming back. We're not used to this. We're not used to this. Like, we never seen Honduras losing by three goals on this type of game. I'm really, really disappointed. But at the same time, I noticed the team, they, even though they make so many mistakes, they never stop fighting. And actually, we got really lucky today. We got to thank the United States. We got to be really, really thankful with these guys, with Bruce Arena, with all the players, because they just stop attacking. They sit back, and they refuse to score more goals. Because if they continue attacking and attacking and attacking, they will be able to score not 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 goals. It's really disappointing. I don't know what's going to happen. I know there's a lot of frustration in the locker room. I know when they go back to Honduras, it's going to be really difficult for the players. I know in the stadium, it's going to be really bad. So I hope the players can like do something against Costa Rica and grab those 3 points. And we're going to be there because that victory from Trinidad and Tobago, it helped us. So it's a group really compact, and everybody has an opportunity to go like on, to be on the second place or third place or fourth place. So hopefully the player is going to have the mentality, the strong mentality to go back and do something against Costa Rica. Other way, I don't know what's going to happen with this team, but if they don't do anything against Costa Rica, I don't see no future.
And we'll see what happens in that one. Let's go to Chris Gluck. Chris, I think you might be feeling some form of vindication right about now. Not so much because – you can tell he's laughing, folks, because he knows what I'm talking about. Because this man was hounding Jurgen Klinsmann throughout the entire 2016 calendar year, even before 2016. This man has been – against what Jurgen Klinsmann has been setting up for whatever game plan he had, and it failed time and time again. Do you feel, Chris, because now that Bruce Arena is back and that performance, and we might have to sit back and, you know, scale this back a little bit, how do you feel right now? Because we just saw something that I didn't think we're going to see in a World Cup qualifier.
You know, Daniel, there's probably, I mean, I started a list here, and it's only a short list. And actually, the first thing that I want to bring up is
And I'm astounded it's a short list.
Well, I didn't have enough time to write down everything. But the first thing I'm going to bring up is is what I think I saw to be the most talented U.S. soccer player I have ever seen. And I want to qualify that. Okay, it's against Honduras. But that said, Christian Pulisic is without a doubt the future attacking leader for the U.S. men's national team, at least based upon what I saw in 92 odd minutes of play today in his role in what I'd call a 10. I don't know, others might call it something different. But so that's the first thing that comes to mind. And then I'll kind of work my way back to, okay, yeah, for about two or three years now, I've had tactical issue with Jurgen Klinsmann as the head coach. I've never been disappointed as seeing him as a striker, as a player. But I think he had a considerable weakness in tactical play. And I'm not sure if we see Klinsmann as the head coach. We see the players that we saw on the pitch today. Nor do I see think we see the tactical nous that was displayed today. And I'll give you an example. One, you had Darlington Nagbe start on the left-hand side. Granted, he probably doesn't if Fabian Johnson is healthy. But he started, and Villafania was the left fullback, who I think would have started anyhow. So you already got chemistry. And you mentioned the high press on Bradley. And what I found interesting was, so to get past the high press, you got to play a little bit more direct. Well, I think about 4 or 5 minutes into the game, maybe less than that, maybe in the three-minute mark, Darlington Nagbe probably made a 30-meter run, dribble penetration with the ball. And, you know, a player like that who shows that talent, that skill, that ability to penetrate and dribble past players, signifies to the opponent, I'm a player you need to watch. And that, just that, you know, 5 seconds of dribble penetration made him more valuable to the U.S. men's national team than I think most people give Nagbe credit for when he plays for the Timbers. Because when he's on the ball, he's like a magnet. He draws players. That creates space for others. So in the dynamics of Nagbe being on the pitch at the same time that Pulisic was on the pitch is similar to Nagbe and Valeri. But the difference between Pulisic and Valeri is Pulisic's better than Diego Valeri. So those are kind of three things I think that come to mind for me as a wrap-up to the game.
I have to agree with you there. Before we go back to Cardick, I want to talk to Eduardo for a second. Have you ever seen a player like Christian Pulisic, Eduardo, that, I mean, let's be honest, I mean, he found his way with the ball to find Clint Dempsey a couple of times, to, you know, the attempt of shot that actually went off the keeper that found Lechit that made it 1-0. Where have you seen a player like that, either for Honduras or against Honduras, that has been that creative so well?
Actually, I was really surprised. And I was expecting Nagbe to make the damage. I didn't see this coming. I didn't see it. I know what kind of player he is, but what he shows today on the field, that was unexpected to me. But I know his quality. I see him playing in Europe. And I know what he's capable. But what he saw today, that was really special to me. Really, really special to me. And for me, he's the future. He's the future. But, you know, I wouldn't like people to rush him and to put, like, all of those, like, big headlines.
Mm-hmm.
But he's still a kid. He's still a big dog. I think people need to go slow, but he's going to be like the next big thing in American soccer. I'm really surprised of what I saw today.
Oh, shit.
And
I mean,
I
agree with you.
It happened to us.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not happy that it happened to us, actually.
Oh, I don't blame you. I don't blame you. I really don't blame you at all. I mean, who would have? I mean, you know, watching the replay of Mexico hosting Costa Rica at the Estadio Azteca today, and of course, Mexico beats Costa Rica 2-0, both goals by Javier Hernandez, by Chicharito, but still, though, Cardiff, you know, I agree with Eduardo. I mean, you know, we kind of felt that he is the future, and we know he shouldn't be rushed at all to reach this greatness, but to see what we saw in 92 minutes, I mean, you know, I'm not saying he's the next coming of Landon Donovan. That there's no way we have to do that. We should not even say it. There should be no comparisons. Look, what Landon has done, Landon is Landon. But to see what he has become so quickly in this qualifier, Cardiff, what he can do at Dortmund, in the Bundesliga, this is the hope that we would like to see. And this kid is down to earth. What an amazing display of quality that we haven't seen maybe since Landon Donovan put on the boots for the USA.
Yeah, he's a different kind of player than Landon Donovan, but I would agree. I mean, at the club level, it's been a long time since we've had an American playing regularly at a club of Dortmund stature. And it's been a long time since we've had a young player we've been this excited about. And when you put that combination together, it's pretty impressive. And certainly he's going to get to play now more for Dortmund with the unfortunate illness that Mario Götze seems to have. And then Marco Reus is always injured. I mean, he's been perennially injured for a couple seasons. So, Pulisic is maybe even going to get an opportunity to play right down the middle for Dortmund. They have to make a decision, will Thomas Tuchel, about that with those injuries. Today, I think the thing that really I have noticed about Pulisic is his vision, his timing of his runs, and his understanding of positioning, which is incredible for a player of his age. And then you add in, of course, his touch and his technical ability and it's off the charts. There are a lot of guys with good technical ability at 18 who don't have his reading and his understanding of the game. And again, I don't want to get too deep down this road, but and I know it polarizes opinion, but and it's not the same for every guy. But if you get guys who have that level of talent leaving this country at 15 or 16 and going to Germany or to Holland or to France or somewhere in Europe, I think it really brings the best out of them, potentially brings the best out of them if they can hack it. I mean, it takes a cultural acclimation and all of that, but you're seeing the impact of him going to Dortmund at a young age. And we've got a set of players now who are very young, knocking around Europe. We've got three guys at Schalke, which is Borussia Dortmund's big rival, by the way. And I visited both those clubs 2 years ago before Pulisic was playing. We've got three Americans there alone at Schalke. And they have arguably the best youth program, at least the best youth academy set up in Germany, Schalke does. So I think it speaks to that. But I also I want to follow up on what the other guys are saying. I agree. This was a disappointing performance from Honduras. They do still have players like Minor Figueroa and Roger Espinoza, who are veterans. And in the case of Minor Figueroa, a player that is a really, really high-level player still, in my opinion. Although I've seen, I saw him decline with age when he went to Hull City a few years ago, just because it's tough to play 38 games in the Premier League playing left back at that age. But I will say that he still, for this CONCACAF level, is a high-level player. So Disappointing performance from Honduras. And I thought Nagbe playing on the left would give Honduras a lot of problems. I agree that that was my read coming into the game. And I think it worked, though, because I think he played a bit of a decoy, and his ability to make the run, as Chris mentioned, created space and channels for Dempsey and Pulisic. And one last point, I think Jozy Altidore had a real good game today without scoring. His finishing touch in some of these big games eludes him. We know that, but he contributed to the build-up play, and his movement was very good. He looked very active. There are some games where Jozy Altidore does not look active, and he looks like he's lumbering and just is not at the pace, but he looked very good today.
Well, the one thing I wish Jozy would do, Kardik, in all honesty, and it's not so much it's in the run of play, it's just I would like for him to just tone it down when it comes to arguing every time there's a foul either on against him. That's the one thing. I mean, look, Jozy, like you said, he did his job today, and that's the good thing about Jozy. But the bad thing is the continuing of – I'm not saying he's not right. I'm not saying, you know, he doesn't have the right to do so. He does. But it's just way too much, and I just like for him to calm down.
Real quickly before you move on, this is not Major League Soccer, right? This is not the Premier League either, where you can pick up yellow cards, and in the Premier League, if you get 5 yellow cards, you get suspended for a game. Here in CONCACAF qualifying in the Hex, if you pick up 2 yellow cards, you get suspended. So in a short period. So you have to tone down the dissent, and this doesn't just go for Jozy Altidore. This goes for everybody on all 6. Mm-hmm. I mean, Kevin Molino has a problem with referees too for Trinidad and Tobago, and you know, it goes for guys like that. And some of the guys on we know the situation with referees in Mexico, right? In Liga MX. It goes for all those guys. It's very different picking up a yellow card, particularly a dumb yellow card, a dumb booking for dissent in qualifying. And so, yeah, I agree with you. I think that applies to all 6 teams in this hexagonal. You don't want to pick up those stupid bookings.
Exactly. Who was going to say something? I think it was Eduardo. Were you going
to
say something?
No. What I was meant to say about the referees is when you play in these type of games, it's not the same as playing in MLS. It's not the same. Mm-hmm. It could be the same referee, but it's not the same. You know, they're not going to stop the game like every time you say something. They're not going to be like protecting the player as they do in MLS. Like they let them play.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that Jozy Altidore need to learn. Like, because when you play Honduras, when you go to Panama to play against this Panamanian team, that they warriors, they fight, they bite, and they do everything that they have to do to win. The referees not gonna help you. So you got to grind when you're playing against these teams in CONCACAF. It's not the same as MLS.
Yeah,
you're absolutely right
there,
Eduardo. Yep.
If I could just, I don't think I'll pile on here, but I would offer that, you know, I thought the U.S. men's national team had a propensity for cynical yellows, cynical fouls that resulted in yellow cards a lot more frequently under Jurgen Klinsmann than maybe any other head coach I've seen that I can remember. And I really didn't see the cynicism with the men's national team. I think Jozy probably went off just a tad bit, but I don't hold him for that yet. I think that might have had a lot to do with there was probably some extra energy on the pitch tonight. Just by virtue of the fact that the black cloud was lifted with Jurgen Klinsmann getting sacked. And, you know, you get that puffy-chested feeling that nothing can go wrong with Bruce Arena coming in and they're playing a home match. And they showed it. They showed a lot of positive play today. But I want to flip the coin around. And you know, at least for me and Daniel and Kardik, and Oh, gosh.
Eduardo.
Who's our friend from Eduardo?
Eduardo.
Eduardo Solano, yes.
Yes, okay, Eduardo, sorry. I don't want it to get lost that there were some poor first touches in the defending half of this game. And there were some probably dodgy communication points, I think, and that's passing, if you will, between players.
Absolutely.
In the defending half. And Bruce Arena is a good head coach, and I don't think that's going to get lost in the video session come tomorrow afternoon. I think he's probably going to have a few stern words, if you will, however stern Bruce gets, about the defensive, what I thought were some defensive flaws. And granted, Bradley got that goal with his left peg atop the 18-yard box as he made a 20-yard run to his left. But if I'm a head coach, and I was a head coach, the first thing that I'm thinking of is, why is Bradley in that position to begin with as a number six?
Let me tell you something, Chris. I got to tell you. I mean, Kardec, our buddy Dave Denholm on Twitter, also complained about that. Look, I've been saying this as well. I don't think Michael Bradley should be in that deep of a midfield position. In fact, I'll be honest with you right
he
now.
He shouldn't be on the pitch.
I'm piling – you know what? Pulisic, I think, he's just basically made him – obsolete. I don't want to say it, but the truth is that, look, if you're going to do something like maybe a 3-5-2, I'm not saying Bruce is going to change the formation out of a 4-4-2 to a 3-5-2, but if he is going to be in the 3-5-2, let's be honest with ourselves right now. The only way that Michael is going to be useful, and I keep saying this, he's too deep in that midfield role, okay? He has to be closer to the attackers, to the strikers, or at least be in the midfielders who are attacking. That's what he has to do. And sadly enough, he put himself in several positions, gentlemen, and Eduardo, you can comment as well. You're more than welcome to do so. Michael Bradley has put himself in positions where, A, you saw the two attackers ready to pounce on him when he's trying to bring up the ball. And most of the time it didn't work because the ball went wide and they went up the flanks. Still, though, Michael Bradley, a couple of times, lost the ball. He lost the ball. I'll say it right here. He lollygagged for no reason whatsoever. Lollygagged. And then he got stripped. One time he was able to get back the ball when he got stripped, and then he got fouled. But the point is this, gentlemen, is that Michael Bradley is an attacking player. He should not have to hold the ball or bring the ball up in a deep midfield role. And I think this is where you lose a player. And we'll even throw this out there, too, when we talk about Jermaine Jones. But if you're still going to use Jermaine Jones, that is his position in the midfield as a sweeper, a destroyer in the midfield. You put right now Michael Bradley like a square peg in a round hole. That's what Michael is right now. And Pulisic at this point in time, we're not trying to throw all this problems on his shoulders. He will be growing into that role as he is the future of the national team. But the truth of the matter is this. He just made Michael Bradley obsolete. Carter, you can go first.
So I think, the need to play Michael Bradley is created by the lack of a reliable holding midfield option, which has now plagued the U.S. for a while. I think that you go back to what Bob Bradley tried to do, which was to shuttle in Mo Adu and Rico Clark and those sorts of players. It's been an issue at that position. Eduardo, I wish we could have borrowed one of Honduras' holding midfielders. I mean, I would take Henry Thomas any day over the guys the U.S. has produced, among others. And there have been several good central midfield players that Honduras has produced. I mean, even a guy like Rambo, who's kicking around here in my neck of the woods now, playing NPSL, the former national team player. I mean, even me, De La Torre, I would take. I think that once that holding midfield player emerges, whether it's a guy that's on the radar now, Will Trapp or Perry Kitchen, or it's someone else, that we're not thinking of right now, Danny Williams over at Reading, someone like that, then Michael Bradley is completely obsolete for this national team. Jermaine Jones is older than Michael Bradley. Otherwise, it would be him. Although, you know, I wonder, Bruce has continued to call Jermaine Jones in, even though he's now 36 or 37? 36,
around that. Yeah, around that.
Yeah. Because I think he gives you a lot in the dressing room, but he also, in qualifying, might give you a little more than Michael Bradley, honestly. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I don't think Arena wants to drop Bradley. He's the captain. But I don't see going forward, when you have a completely fit midfield, where he necessarily can play. Because I think as a shield in front of the back four, when you're playing the return leg against Honduras and San Pedro Sula, or you're playing down at Azteca, or you're going to San Jose, well, they're not going to San Jose, they don't have to do that, but playing Costa Rica at home, you're going to want an effective shield in front of that back four, and I don't think he provides that when he is, I can't remember if it was you, Daniel, or Chris, who said he's lollygagging on the ball. That has become
That's
a
me.
Pattern with Michael Bradley. Yeah, it's
that
become
was
a pattern
me.
With Michael Bradley over the course of the last year and a half, 2 years, and his positioning sense isn't as good. He scored that great goal today. Let's not take that away from him. But he's not always positioned properly, and that was the thing. And I'll bring you in on this, Chris, because I know you and I have talked about this privately. Michael Bradley, 3-4 years ago, the thing he really had going for him was that he could read the game. He could read the speed of the game, and he was normally in the right position, whether he was playing as a holding midfielder or a more advanced midfielder. Now, he's not even reading the game very well, to be honest with you, quickly enough to stay at the international level.
You know, I'd almost offer that the game played him. He didn't play the game. And, you know, for me to offer that, that's kind of like me saying doesn't belong on the pitch.
Okay. If he doesn't change the way he plays, how do you replace him? Because
well, I think you go with Dax McCarty.
Like, from my understanding, like, there's three players in the national U.S. national team that you cannot replace because of their past. I know the most important thing is the present, what they're doing right now. But Clint Dempsey, Jose Altidor, and Michael Bradley, if you ask, like, internationally, like, some of the people in other countries, they should always be there. Like, those three players, they should always play. And I think the fourth player will be Howard. How do you replace him?
Well, Eduardo, I'll step in and take the bullet on this one first. Okay, my view is I always take a fresh look. And for me, I don't see Michael Bradley as a six. I don't think I've ever seen him as a six. I can see if you give more time to Will Trapp, Perry Kitchen, even Jermaine Jones, who's older and crustier. But there's also maybe, like Cardick mentioned, Danny Williams. But for me, the first player off the bench would have been Dax McCarty. He reads the game, and he understands the game from playing the six. I think he's played that six position for a long time, and he's got the motor. But he doesn't find himself pushing forward out of, like Cardick mentioned, and I've mentioned, and I think Daniel mentioned, you know, out of his role, his position. Altidore, for me, if we're going to kind of talk about those four that you mentioned, Altidore, for me, until this game today, I don't ever think I've seen him play an effective number nine like he did today. Honestly, in all the soccer that I've seen, I've never seen him play as a number nine like he did today. So if Altidore is the number nine that he is today, the rest of the World Cup qualifying, then I believe he needs to start over Bobby Wood. Clint Dempsey, I've always felt, you know, he needs
but,
to be on the
by
pit.
The way, let me jump in just for a second, Chris, and let you finish in a minute.
Yeah.
But on Bobby Wood, I got the impression from the way Bruce Arena was talking and also talking to a couple of our reporter friends that were covering the national team that if Bobby Wood had been fit today, he probably would have gotten the start over Altidore.
Really?
So keep that in mind.
Well, then, okay, so Altidore not only had him hit the national team to play for, he had himself to play for.
Mm-hmm. I agree
with
Kartika saying.
So there's a big fire under his arse for his survival, because I've always kind of questioned him as a number nine anyhow, and I've always thought previously when I saw Bobby Wood, okay, he could be a number nine. I mean, he plays brilliantly with his back to goal. As far as goalkeepers, Tim Howard, I don't you're right, Eduardo. I don't think anybody else belongs on the pitch as a goalkeeper for the U.S. men's national team other than Tim Howard. For me,
Eduardo,
the glaring – yeah, I was
just one second, Chris. Oh, yeah, go ahead. Let me get this out, and then you can finish your thought. Eduardo, remember the home opener with the Red Bulls where he stopped Bradley Wright Phillips three times?
Yes.
Tim Howard?
Yes.
I'm telling you, as soon as Tim Howard – had the match of his life coming back home for the first time as a goalkeeper, but not for the home team. Okay? The three opportunities that Bradley Wright Phillips had to get a goal stopped him dead. Dead. No matter where in his 6-yard box that Tim Howard was in, you knew. Even I knew. I said to myself, Tim Howard's ready for these qualifiers for Honduras and Panama. And what a performance this one that he had in that home opener for the Red Bulls. I mean, if it's not for the own goal, it's a nil-nil draw, right, Eduardo?
Yes. I mean, it's hard to replace a goalkeeper with, you know, that quality. And mostly of the national team, they have goalkeepers over 30, 35 years old.
Yeah.
Like, in the Honduran team, I feel that Noel Valladares should be playing for the national team. He retired. He's not playing no more. But I think he should be playing because he was a great goalkeeper. And he was like Dax McCarty was for the Red Bulls. He was the soul and heart of the Honduran national team. But he's not there no more. And you saw what happened today.
Yep.
Yeah. The other point I was going to make with respect to Tim Howard is he helps make center backs better. The biggest weakness the U.S. men's national team have had, I think, forever, has been the lack of two quality center backs.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah,
that's another reason why I think Tim Howard's got to play, because he makes the center backs better just by his presence.
He communicates better with the center backs, I think, than the other U.S. keepers, which is a point that I think Eduardo would agree about Noel Valladares. There was always the talk among my Honduran friends that he kept that back line organized for Honduras. And I would give Rueda credit, and I would give Suarez credit, that their managers. And my Honduran friends, Eduardo, would say, it's the keeper. He's keeping them organized. He's communicating with them, and that's important. One other point that Eduardo made, I think, is right, though. Chris and I are analyzing this team and saying, and I think giving our views on where these players stand. But the historically in U.S. soccer, there have been sacred cows, and there has been a deification of top players, which means that we are probably not going to see any of these guys drop anytime soon. Let's be honest about it. They'll find a way to play Michael Brown. They'll find a way to play Altidore. They'll find a way to play Dempsey. Well, based on today's evidence, Dempsey should still be playing. And, of course, Howard. Howard, there's another keeper close to him in the pool, so I think he's going to keep playing for a while. But that's just been the history with the U.S.
Let me talk about Clint Dempsey for a second, gentlemen. Let's talk about Clint Dempsey right now, because let us be honest with ourselves. And I'm just saying this. I've never given up on Clint at all. I never gave up on Clint. I wanted him to get back 100% fitness, to be 100% healthy. And at the same time, as we were talking about this, at you know, if Clint Dempsey was going to be brought back in slowly by Bruce Arena, I would have understood, to be honest. I would have definitely understood that because, to be honest with you, I was expecting Bobby Wood and Jose Altidore paired up top as strikers for the USA. Clint Dempsey was slowly going to get his position back, but I felt he was going to be used as a super sub in these two games. Now, whether, you know, thank goodness for Bruce Arena keeping tabs with the Seattle Sounders medical team and the training staff to see where he is, and the evidence he just showed, what he just showed, not only did he power that ball past the keeper for the first goal for him this evening, not just the great ball that he got from Pulisic, he pulled the keeper off his line, and then he buries it for number two, but the free kick bomb that he buried, he just freaking buried. I'm telling you right now, Clint is back. Don't go slow with him unless you want to give him a break for the Panama game. Whatever Bruce wants to do, it's fine. I don't care. Right now, he's got carte blanche. But Clint Dempsey right now has just proven that he is back starting for this national team. And I'm telling you right now, there's no way he's going to be a super sub in the World Cup if they do find the full way to get back to where they should be and qualify for Russia. Chris, you first.
You know, I got mixed thoughts about Clint, only because I'm in Portland, Oregon. I don't know if that means anything to you, Eduardo, but there's a team called the Portland Timbers, and there's a team called the Seattle Sounders.
Okay, listen. This is called country, okay? This is a country post-game show. Club doesn't matter anymore here. It's red, white, and blue. It's not that teal green versus the forest green, okay? Get your mind in focus.
But I was going to put aside.
I mean, they don't. I mean, I know Liverpool fans who say England is filled with Man United players. Why should we support England? We're going to support Scotland or Ireland or the United States. It's true. I mean, if you're a club fan, you know, these things are more important than the national team. But go ahead.
But you know, the Timbers were well represented anyhow. Because they had a Jorge Villafana on the pitch as well as Darlington Nagbe. But I've always felt that Clint Dempsey should be on the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think he's probably one of the best strikers, and I say that different than a forward or a midfielder. I think he's one of the best strikers the U.S. men's national team has ever had. And I quantify a striker differently than a forward or midfielder. So I'll just offer that. And I.
Okay. Well, he got dropped again. He's been having cell issues currently, Mr. Chris Gluck, but he'll be back. But Eduardo, if you'd like to add on as well, please go ahead. Because who would you say Clint Dempsey mirrors for the national team for Honduras? That has that dynamic, not just a great shot, an accurate shot, but his strength of shielding off the defender for that first goal that he scored against Honduras. Who does he mirror on the national team that has that strength to shield off a defender and just pound it into the back of the net?
Well, we're talking about Clint Dempsey. And when we talk about this guy, he's been a problem for the Honduran national team over years. And it seems like our players, they're never going to be able to stop him. And tonight, for me, he was brilliant. And the chances that he had, he made them. And at the end of the game, he said, you know what? I wanted to stay hungry, and I like that because if I were a player, if I were on the field and I already have six goals, I would try to score some more. I feel like when you have no mercy of your opponent,
you create like a winning mentality. A better type of soccer. And I like what he did. I would have liked him to see him scoring more, like 4 or 5 goals.
Absolutely. Chris Gluck is back now. Absolutely. Chris Gluck is back now. And, Chris, you can go ahead and finish your thought. I know you're in the middle. You must have hit the hang-up button by accident, but that's okay.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. But, you know, the closing thought I had gets back to a play by Clint late on in the game, which if I were number 9 and I'd worked hard all game and I hadn't scored a goal, I would certainly appreciate. He tried to play in Jozy Altidore for the 7th goal there, and I thought that was first class. I've always thought Dempsey was a great player. And I'll just leave it at that, because if I get extra minutes, I want to talk about Jorge Villafania. But anyhow, Eduardo was offering some thoughts there. So.
Go ahead, Eduardo. Go ahead.
No. I want to hear his point about Villafania, and also I would like to hear him talk about Bonilla Garcia. I'm really close to Bonilla Garcia. You see him, like, he struggled with the Houston Dynamo. He hasn't even get the chance to play. But today when he came into the field, like, he shows a lot of heart. He fought. And for me, like, those 45 minutes that he played, he was the best player for Honduras. So I would like to hear like what do you guys think about the Honduran players, like who's the one that you think that performed the best, or the one that you liked, the one that you were disappointed.
Go ahead, Chris.
Kartik, you're there, mate. Go for it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, pregame I had talked about how influential I thought Andy Nahar would be in this game based on how well he's played at Anderlecht recently. So I guess if I'm going to talk about who I was disappointed in, it would be Nahar. I mean, I don't think he was I don't think he had service tonight, right? But it, sometimes when you're playing in this very kind of complicated five-man midfield, you're going to have to drop back into position and do some things, I think, to have an influence on the match, which he didn't do. So that was disappointing for me. I thought Izaguirre was very ineffectual, which was surprising for me in this match, and that's another veteran player that I rate quite highly. And, you know, I just felt like the midfield for Honduras was so dysfunctional that you have to lay some of that on Roger Espinoza and Claros having bad games. So I can't pick out a guy who I thought played well. Maybe Eduardo has a thought about that. But the guys I was tipping pregame and talked about on our pregame show, Daniel, none of them came through for Honduras tonight. And I named those four guys as I thought were going to be influential, and none of them were.
Yeah,
now you're right there, Carter.
Horrible.
Yep.
You can go ahead, Eduardo.
No, I was talking
about
that. Jorge Claro was horrible. We didn't get to see Andy Nahar. Roger Espinoza, he tried, but he didn't shine. Minor Figueroa, it seemed like he was lost. Henry Figueroa, which is a great player, he did pretty good when we played Panama. He made, like, big mistakes today. He was in focus. This guy that used to play for Kansas City, actually, he didn't play for Kansas City. He played for the USL team. Every Alvarado, he didn't do anything. He hardly played in Honduras. saw a whole bunch of bad performances and bad decisions too from the coach. I'm really disappointed. Like, I don't really think like nobody played good but Boniek. I think he tried. I think he wanted to win. He wanted to do something, at least score one goal or two goals, something that could be like really, really big when you get to the last games. I mean, the last game, one goal or two goals could make a difference when you try to qualify to the World Cup. So, really bad performance from the Honduran national team today. Like,
yeah, Eduardo, I mean, here's my thoughts for what they're worth. I mean, I've not seen them play a whole lot, but, I mean, my first thoughts were, okay, there's a high press. Okay, mm-hmm. So when there's a high press, as an opposing head coach, the thing that I'm going to hope happens is communication between the width of the midfield and the center of the midfield is cut off because there's too much space. Because either you're pressing up on the wing or you're pressing in the middle. And they pressed in the middle, particularly to shut down Bradley, which meant they isolated Nahar and Quito, who Quito, if I pronounce his name right, I expected
Kyoto.
I expected him to actually dominate Cameron because I just got done seeing him play against the Timbers against a very fast right fullback by the name of Alvis Powell. And he stretched Powell. And I thought, okay, if there's going to be a weakness, it's going to be on the left against Cameron. I've seen Villafania play for a number of years. And if you guys are offering that Nahar had an off game, I'd say that had to do with Jorge Villafania controlling the space that Nahar normally would take in the attacking third of the pitch. And because he's played with Nagby, there was a great chemistry between the two. And I don't know if you watched those two, but they interchanged positions quite a lot as Honduras moved the ball around on the right side. But the overload never helped, never got him anywhere. So to me, the weakness was the head coach setting the high press that destroyed the communication between Espinosa and Kyoto. That's the one thing. The other thing is I expected Honduras to play a low block, which then makes your wings even more potent in the counterattack. And they didn't play a low block either. So that's on the head coach, too.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. Let's get some information now, some news that's been breaking now on Twitter from ESPN's Julie Stewart Binks. Apparently, Sebastian Leggett, after he got tackled down on that near side play after he's made it 1-0, he was leaving in a walking boot and on crutches, leaving the stadium, says he will undergo more testing in the morning. And apparently, also from ESPN, Jeff Carlisle, he's reporting that Mr. John Brooks has a sinus issue. So that's why he had the dehydration situation when he went down. He felt dizzy and he went down on his own. So nothing major for John Brooks. He will be available for the qualifier down in Panama this coming Tuesday night. So at least that's one good and one bad. You don't want to see it all bad, but still, though, hopefully for Leggett, he'll be back out there, and hopefully scans will be nothing, but we'll have to hope and wait and see what's going to happen there. Once again, we're going to recap scores, or let's recap this one here, absolutely. With the goal tally, of course, Clint Dempsey with a hat-trick, Michael Bradley, Sebastian Leggett, and Christian Pulisic with a goal. It was Leggett in the 5th minute, Michael Bradley in the 27th, Clint Dempsey in the 32nd, and then Pulisic on the restart, made it 4-0, and then Dempsey gets his second 3 minutes later after Pulisic's goal, and then the free kick wonder goal in the 54th. That was just exquisite timing, and that made it 6-0 for the United States. Other scores, once again, Trinidad and Tobago defeating Panama by a goal to nil, and Costa Rica over at the Estadio Azteca, Mexico will get their victory 2-0 over Costa Rica, and both goals were credited to Chicharito Javier Hernandez. So, gentlemen, here is how the table looks in the hex before we get to this coming Tuesday.
Kevin Molina scored the goal for Trinidad and Tobago.
Yes, he did. Kevin Molina scoring the goal for Trinidad and Tobago against Panama at Hazley Crawford Stadium. So Mexico right now, 7 points there at the top of the hex. Costa Rica with their first loss in the hex of 2017. They are in second place with 6 points. Panama in third place with 4 points. But for the United States right now, for the United States, gentlemen, they climb out of – I mean, I am just flabbergasted how they climbed out of this hole. And right now they are no longer minus five on the differential. They're on a plus one, and are in the fourth place playoff position with this destruction over Honduras. And Honduras right now is last, and Trinidad and Tobago are in fifth. But still, as Eduardo has said, the loss by Panama helps Honduras. So there's going to be another big set of qualifiers this coming Tuesday night, and we're just going to have to wait and see what will happen there, because we could have more intrigue as it goes along these next couple of days. So as we are – we still got some time here, obviously, gentlemen. But once again, Eduardo, I mean, what is the concerns for Honduras now? Even though you did say Panama's loss does help them, what is the concern of Honduras right now? Because I believe – their next opponent – are they – going to face Mexico now, or are they facing somebody else?
Honduras?
Yes.
Oh, we got to go to Mexico on the next round.
Mm-hmm.
And but now they got to go back to Honduras. And I know it's going to be really, really difficult for the players. I'm pretty sure they won't be able to come out from the hotel, because it's going to be really hostile, a lot of people
mm-hmm.
saying things, a lot of people upset.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
they're not going to feel that feeling of going back home. They're not going to have that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not going to be able to do anything. They're going to be in their rooms training, and then to the room. Actually, in Honduras, when you go to a game, you don't really get your tickets in advance. Mostly of the time, you go to the stadium and then you buy your tickets. So I'm not sure, even though they're going to play on a small stadium, I don't know how good it's going to be, the attendance. And something
mm-hmm.
else, it's pretty common to see in Honduras when the team is not playing good and things are going south, you will see the fans supporting the other team.
Uh-oh, that's going to be terrible. Well, here's the schedule for this coming Tuesday night. Honduras will be home, but it will be against Costa Rica. So that's going to be at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, 4 o'clock, I believe, on the East Coast. Trinidad and Tobago are going to be home to Mexico. And once again, the United States will be traveling down to Panama. But let me just say this, gentlemen, thank you very much for your times. I always appreciate it. And everyone, I hope you have a good evening, and please get some sleep. And Kartik, I'll talk to you. I'm going to do pregame on Tuesday as well as postgame. But Kartik, you have a good
yep.
night. Talk to you next time. Chris, talk to you on postgame on Tuesday night. Eduardo, I appreciate your time. Thank you very much. And I will see you this Saturday afternoon, as the Red Bulls will be hosting Real Salt Lake.
Let's go Red Bulls.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Hang on. Let me just Chris fell off the earth again. Let me just wish him a proper goodbye. He's probably hearing me right now. He's probably hanging up. But, yep, Chris, have a good night, and I'll talk to you on Tuesday night, okay? All right, there he goes. I want to thank once again my guests, Carter Krishnar, World Soccer Talk. I want to thank Chris Gluck from the Yellow Card Podcast, who does it with Stephen Brandt. And, of course, I want to thank Eduardo Solano from La Prensa, paper from Honduras, after these qualifiers. The United States defeating, destroying every which way possible on Honduras by a final of 6-0. A Clint Dempsey hat trick. Goal and two assists by Christian Pulisic. Sebastian Leggett and Michael Bradley just adding on to the score sheet. Thank you, everyone. Have a good evening. Have a good early morning as well. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye for now. And as always, enjoy your football.